Welcome to the Exide Cafe podcast. I'm your host, Simon Fraser, and welcome to our guest, Stan. I'll give Stan a very quick introduction here. So Stanford Swinton is an executive vice president at Bain & Company, specializing in marketing and customer experience, and the founder and general manager of MPSX, a venture within Bain that provides companies with advanced analytics software, and the former global vice president for CX at Deliveroo. Hi, Stan. Good to have you on.
Hi, Simon. Thanks for having me.
Pleasure. Well, I'm really looking forward to today's podcast. I know that we've got a few questions that we'd like to get some answers to from you, Stan, and have that conversation about what you're thinking about CX at the moment and really listen and learn from you. So I'm going to jump straight in with a question. So today, what are some of the challenges businesses are facing in driving positive economic outcomes from customer experience, such as increasing customer retention or growth?
That's a great question, Simon. I mean, obviously, we're in an ever increasingly competitive market where what we're seeing is, you know, essentially less and less differentiation in the experience. You know, whereas a couple of years ago, you could differentiate by having a better digital strategy, a better omni-channel strategy. A lot of companies have really started to deliver those experiences that are essentially equivalent or on par to what, you know, we used to know as the best experiences. So customers are starting to look for other ways for companies to differentiate. A couple of the big themes that we see, one of those is around personalization. Really understanding the segment of one that is an individual customer and tailoring that experience for that customer. And that's really kind of the next horizon when it comes to, you know, unique differentiation in any given marketplace. The other part of that is social and ethical differentiation. So really kind of establishing your brand as a brand that wins on purpose using the Bain publication language and puts, you know, customer enrichment and some of their social and ethical missions at the center of what they're doing, both as at a brand, but also in how they live and execute their experience.
So that combination of personalization using obviously some of the latest technology around that, but also standing for something and differentiating around the values that you're providing. Okay, that makes a lot of sense. Now something I've had the pleasure and privilege of hearing you talk about is about the third wave of CX. Really interested to know a little bit more about that, but also how has it come about and how is MPSX supporting that?
Yeah, so if you think that the experience itself needs to evolve, so too do customer experience functions. And, you know, if you think about the last few decades of customer experience development within our industries, you know, rewind 20 years ago, we were, those of us who were kind of practitioning back then, we're all wrapped up in debates around which metric we would be using. There were Harvard Business Review articles about, you know, is effort score better and when is it better? Is NPS better? Is satisfaction better? You know, I think we ultimately matured beyond that and realized that ultimately what we're looking for is a metric that sort of serves as a proxy for customer value and the behaviors that we're trying to approximate with surveys and customer feedback. And we started moving into the second wave, what I would call the second wave, if that's the first wave of CX, which was more about then learning from the feedback, less obsession about the metric, more about the commentary, and then building that commentary back into a series of feedback loops. We often referred to the inner loop or kind of team-based or individual learning and the outer loop, which is more structural or enterprise learning. And so that's what gave birth in the Bain world to the Net Promoter System, which you know, we've been working with clients for many, many years. And now we're moving into the next wave. So things don't stand still. And you know, the kind of prevalent practices and the best practices of 5-10 years ago are no longer sufficient within a CX capability to really support that experience we were just talking about, the personalized, truly differentiated experience. And so the third wave is about evolving our experience practices from heavily kind of survey and sentiment based to more customer value centric, to more real-time personalized and predictive, leveraging things like artificial intelligence and machine learning to be able to understand outcomes for all of our customers, not just those customers that take surveys. So that's kind of the thesis around the third wave of CX.
And obviously that should lead to then being a differentiation in that business's approach to CX and how they design, how they take action off the back of that, and how they create that sort of internal and external narrative as well. That makes sense. So as businesses who may feel a bit stuck still in the second wave, how should we be encouraging businesses to move into the third wave? Are there certain steps that they should take and think about in terms of moving to that type of approach?
Yeah, well, a lot of the foundational steps for the second wave and the third wave are the same. First of all, just understanding who your customers are, what their needs are, what we refer to as a customer taxonomy for your business. You know, customers' needs, journeys, pathways, drivers of those experiences, and defining those really well. We used to do that in order to then define where we would trigger our surveys. And those are still important listening posts within our programs. But we can take that same taxonomy and apply them in the third wave of CX to say, well, how should we be structuring our data sets? What data do I need to really understand this set of drivers for this particular pathway, for this particular journey, for this particular need? And so we often hear a lot about single view of customer. A lot of companies have taken that to mean I just need to smash all my data together in the cloud somewhere in a giant data lake. Yes, you do need to do that. And you need to structure it in a way that makes sense for your taxonomy so that you can power specific use cases, whether that's, personalizing marketing or personalizing a policy to recover a customer when things have gone wrong. That draws on that data lake and that single view of customer, what I would refer to as customer data management, to be able to power those experiences. But you need that structure. And so a lot of the foundations are the same. If you haven't gotten that far in the second wave, so let's say you're a company that, still is kind of in its infancy, even for its survey programs, there are opportunities to leapfrog. So it doesn't mean that you have to kind of successively go through, set up, over 3 years, a huge, listening post program, and then start to experiment with generative AI and listening and inferred sentiment with predictive analytics or machine learning. You can do that from the beginning. And so in some ways, you don't have a lot of the baggage that a company that's kind of 5 years into the second wave technology has, and then needs to kind of run those in parallel. So the change efforts are different, but I don't think there's a company out there that shouldn't be looking at the third wave and starting to experiment their way into new ways of understanding customers, new ways of kind of linking sentiment back to value directly and understanding what's driving that sentiment.
So in many ways, it would be great to not have that legacy. But however, having that legacy doesn't mean that you shouldn't move through and take that move into the third wave. So that makes sense. I really like your point there about putting structure to the world of the unstructured as well. So actually having that taxonomy creates that organization in order to drive change. And we have to recognize, obviously, that not everybody leaves surveys. There's lots of really important other bits of data and data signals out there. So how does predictive CX in that environment help to unlock value for businesses?
Well, a couple of ways. First of all, value comes from customers. And so the whole premise of surveying and understanding why a customer might be happy or not happy is to unlock that value, right? If a customer is unhappy, we want to find ways to retain them. If they're happy, we want to find ways to activate them. Predictive CX will help you tag more of your customers when it comes to sentiment. So, you can get 100% of your customers, kind of NPS scores through a predicted NPS program rather than just those customers who have taken the survey. That's essentially your sample that we extrapolate from to build out our predictive models. But it goes further than that. Predictive CX, because of the way it's built off the back of contextual data and operational data and those customer surveys and feedback. It can link back directly to operational KPIs, whereas surveys will often give you thematic pain points. For example, it took too long. Well, it may have took too long, but what does that mean? Is it 5 minutes that I'm designing for? Is it 2 minutes that I'm designing for completion time with my online application form, for example? So you know, that predictive program gives you the specific design targets that your teams can go and design against and deliver in the experiences. And then the final piece that is the and with predictive CX is the linkage directly back to value. So being able to say, not only is this going to predict a better CSAT or NPS score, I'm also trying to predict the correlations and the drivers of the financial outcomes. So for example, I'm a bank and I want to deliver a great credit card application experience, right? Credit cards drive good value for me as a bank. They're also great for customers because I can spend ahead of their earnings.
Yeah.
So it's good for us. It's good for the bank. You know, we can survey a customer at the end of that and understand for a percentage of them whether they enjoyed that experience of applying for a credit card, whether it was useful for them, whether it worked. We can add predictive on top of that and understand for 100% of the customers who went through that, whether it was good or whether it wasn't. We can also then link it back to specific steps through that experience and define the design principles. So for example, it took too long on that page. It didn't pre-fill my details. That was annoying. Specific drivers of those outcomes, and then correlate it to the final value metrics, which in this case would be, did that customer activate and use the card or didn't they? Because if they didn't, we didn't get any value. In fact, it's just cost for the business. So we're looking at that whole thing end to end. And then if you think about the last few years, the disciplines around developing journey management, journey accountabilities, you know, how much more powerful is that for a journey owner to be able to see not only the what's driving 100% of customers, what are the design targets, but also what's driving my value equations.
So yeah, so moving away from claimed behavior to actual behavior and connecting all those dots at pace, you don't have to wait. You can see these things in this digital world happening here and now and be able to make that relationship very clear to the different stakeholders. So we're also, we're not talking about something which is to come. This is here right now. So if you've got some examples of businesses who are taking advantage of the third wave already in terms of how they're using predictive and other techniques.
Yeah, for sure. You know, recently been working with an insurance company that had this problem. I mean, basically they were spending millions of pounds against CX initiatives denominated in net promoter scores. So, you know, the targets were NPS based and the drivers, quote unquote, drivers for the experiences were in verbatim categories. And so, you know, that was how they were prioritizing their CX spend. And then, you know, an all too well-worn path, they were getting frustrated with the fact that their scores were going in the wrong direction, despite all the activity that they were putting in behind these insights. And so we started out with a few proof of concepts in one of their product areas, just building out predictive CX. So giving them visibility of one, the sentiment of all the customers going through that experience so they could close the loop with those customers. Again, a second generation or second wave practice that we're bringing into the third wave and into the now. And then also activate those customers who came out of that as promoters, but then also identifying for them what was driving the experience. And interestingly, one of the correlations for one of the journeys was just the average number of holds per contact for those coming in through the human channels had gone through the roof, and nobody had flagged this in their MBRs, their monthly business reviews. And so the correlation analysis identified it. And then as they dug into it, they realized there had been a lot of this silent churn going on in the contact centers. And so you were getting these new agents coming through that weren't being properly kind of onboarded or trained. And so you had these significant increases in hold times and not surprisingly, you know, driving the NPS scores down, the transactional and journey-based NPS scores. So very quick insights into that. And they set a target on that going from essentially kind of like three average holds per contact down to one, and then worked to that and very quickly delivered significant improvements in those journey experiences. But also started looking at, you know, the failure there was causing cost, but it was also driving failure in revenue because it was actually a sales journey. One of the journeys was a sales journey and customers weren't completing that experience when it was bad. They were dropping out. And so they were leaving money on the table. And so those driver analyses were not only helping us identify how to fix the NPS problem, but also how to fix the complete the journey problem, which was driving direct value contribution to the bottom line. So, you know, just one of many examples. A lot of companies are already starting to explore these technologies.
Love that. Actionable, tangible, and always, again, linked back to the economic value. So it's not just about moving an NPS. It's about actually what's the return on investment from that. So last couple of quick questions before we let you go, Stan. So we talked about earlier about those businesses who some of them maybe have legacy CX in place, maybe in wave two. So for those sorts of organizations, what are the sorts of challenges that they may face in terms of making this move into the third wave? And have you got any advice on what they might be able to do or how they might communicate to their fellow stakeholders in terms of the value of making this move?
Yeah. First of all, I wouldn't necessarily say it's a con to be far down the track on second wave. So I don't want to kind of misconstrue that. It's different pros and cons. If you don't already have a lot of the capability in place, then yeah, you have a bit more of a clean slate, but you still have to do the work to create the culture.
Right.
If you have a strong second wave culture, then you already have executives who understand the importance of customer experience. Often they believe in the power of creating promoters and the value that can create. All this is really doing is giving them more assurity and more data and insight, not necessarily data, sorry, but insight into where they need to place the incremental, you know, dollar, pound, euro, yen, whatever your currency, to be able to drive the outcomes that you're looking for and the value equation. You know, what would my advice be, I guess, in that is, first of all, start with common frameworks that are already well established. So, for example, a lot of second wave companies we've worked with understand that there are four levels of customer feedback. There's strategic competitive feedback, there's relationship feedback, there's journey feedback, and there's interaction feedback. That doesn't change in the third wave. So start with keep something that's common and well socialized, but think about the way in which we collect data at each of those levels is just evolving. So we're going from a survey only approach to a survey plus predicted approach. And it's a similar journey we went on, you know, 5 to 10 years ago when we had to convince everybody that we needed surveys at the end of journeys, right? It didn't exist. But we had interaction surveys at the end of calls. So it was just, it's that little bit of step beyond. So I would definitely anchor it in what's familiar, bring some of these benefits that we've talked about today to the fore. Definitely send the executives this podcast and say, hey, have a listen. This is what I'm talking about. Because the value is there. And then create promoters within, from your CFO, from some of the strong business sponsors that are working with you in the group functions of CX, because they will get it. They have, a lot of them are so frustrated with the fact that they've been handing NPS targets every year, CSAT targets every year, without enough to act on, and you're coming with a solution. And that solution also links back to the broader business objectives that they have to grow their business. Right, top line growth efficiently. And so you had the opportunity to come and say, I tick all those boxes for you. This is what we need to do differently.
Fantastic. That's great advice, Stan. So I hope everybody who's heard that is, as you just said, now going to go and speak to their executives and share this podcast link. Stan, absolutely brilliant to have you on the podcast. Look forward to welcoming you again into the future. So thank you very much for your time.
Thank you so much.